We'd like to welcome Whitefish Bay High School. Would those students please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. We're also delighted to welcome members of the Law Society. Would they stand? Where are you members of the Law Society? Or which Law Society? Pardon me? University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Thank you. Thank you for coming, and you join colleagues over many years of visiting the court, and we're always delighted to have you. You might be seated, please. The high school students are here with a program cleverly entitled Court with Class. High school students across the state are invited to join us for an oral argument, and if they agree to come, they are sent materials concerning this case. They also might engage in some activities relating to the case. They come to Madison and hear the oral argument, and then we'll meet with a justice after this second case to discuss the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues of the case. So we're delighted to have you. And as I said, the UW-Whitewater Law Society is a frequent visitor of the court, and they too are invited to join with the justice at the end of this case. Indeed, anyone who wishes to join the conversation may do so. With those introductions made, I will now call the second case of the day, 08AP446CR, State versus Popke. Arguing on behalf of the state of Wisconsin is Mark Neuser. Is it Neuser or Neuser?
It's Neuser.
Neuser. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Assistant Attorney General Mark Neuser, and I represent the state in this matter. On a plea of no contest, defendant Michael Popke stands convicted in Waupaca County of operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of an intoxicant as a third offense. In a one-judge opinion, the Court of Appeals reversed an order to suppress evidence derived from the stop of Popke's truck and reversed the judgment of conviction. Unlike the trial court, the Court of Appeals concluded that Popke did not violate Wisconsin Statute Section 346.05, which states that, except in circumstances that are not present here, drivers shall drive on the right half of the roadway. The Court of Appeals held that when Popke swerved to the wrong side of the road, he was not, quote, driving, close quote, his vehicle for purposes of Wisconsin Statute 346.05. The Court of Appeals also concluded that the officer who made the stop lacked reasonable suspicion to believe that Popke might have been or may have been driving while intoxicated, despite having seen Popke turn into the correct lane, then swerve to the wrong side of the road, then veer back to the correct lane and almost hit the curb, and then fade back toward the center of the road and almost hit a median. The state asked this court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision and reinstate the judgment of conviction, thereby affirming the trial court's determination that the stop of Popke's car was constitutionally sound. Now, moving to
Neuser, what's the standard of review that we should be applying in this case?
Well, the standard of review, the facts are essentially undisputed. You must be looking at the facts under a clearly erroneous standard of review, and in terms of the constitutional issues presented, of course, that's a de novo standard of review.
What portion of the determinations made by the circuit judge here would come within the framework of erroneous exercise under the guise, if you will, of historical facts?
I believe that the defendant's main contention, as articulated in his brief before this court, is that the trial court, could not believe the officer's testimony that he could have physically seen Popke move left of center based on the officer's position of his vehicle, based on the poor lighting, it was 1:30 o'clock in the morning, and based on the fact that there was not a marked yellow center line on this residential street. So those are the factual findings, I believe, that the defendant challenges in this case.
Are the factual findings such as they include the description that the circuit judge made of, after hearing the testimony of both the officer and the defendant, the determinations he made of the man going three quarters across into the opposing lane, then coming back, as you just described, and just about hitting the curb, and then coming back and just missing the median? Are those what you would consider historical facts?
Absolutely.
So you think that's where we apply the erroneous exercise standard?
In order to overturn those facts, you would have to show that those are clearly erroneous. You would have to show that the police officer's testimony was simply incredible. And of course, the circuit court is the ultimate arbiter of witnesses' credibility. The circuit court is in a much better position than this court or any other appellate court to resolve whether the witness is inherently incredible. And evidence is incredible when it is in conflict with the uniform course of nature or with fully established or conceded facts. The Seventh Circuit has put it with slightly more color. They've said that a clearly erroneous factual finding must strike the court as wrong with the force of a five-week-old unrefrigerated dead fish. We are nowhere near that standard here.
You don't think we should apply that standard, do you?
It is a Friday in Lent, so... The facts of this case are unquestionably supported by the record. He swerved left of center. Those are the facts. The question is whether that swerving left of center constitutes driving left of center. The Court of Appeals said no. We say the answer should be yes. One of the principal means of statutory interpretation is you have to look at the plain and ordinary and common meaning of the language in a statute. So here we're looking at the word drive. The state submits that when Popke was behind the wheel of his vehicle, steering it, pressing on the gas pedal, swerving into the wrong lane, he was, by any question, driving that vehicle, as that term is used in Wisconsin Statute 346.05. We also pointed out in our brief that if there was any doubt as to that plain and ordinary and common sense meaning of the word drive, we could look to other statutes within Wisconsin. Now, Popke did plead no contest to driving under the influence. There is a definition of the word drive in that statute, and drive is defined as the exercise of physical control over the speed and direction of a motor vehicle while it is in motion. That is exactly what Popke was doing. I found two other instances in the Wisconsin statutes where drive is explicitly defined. That's in Wisconsin Statute 343.051B. That's tests for intoxication. And Wisconsin Statute 943.23. That's operating a vehicle without the owner's consent. And drive is defined identically in those other statutes. So I don't think there's really any room for argument that the Wisconsin legislature has defined drive, and that meaning applies to Popke's conduct in this case.
Counsel, let me make sure I understand your argument, and if I don't, then correct me. Number one, you're saying there's probable cause for the stop for the violation of the driving left of center.
Right.
You're also saying there's reasonable suspicion to stop to investigate for possible drunk driving based not only on that offense, but also the subsequent conduct, true?
Correct. And of course, we only get to point number two, the reasonable suspicion of drunk driving, if you conclude that there wasn't a violation of the motor vehicle law.
And there's no challenge to probable cause to arrest.
That's correct. That's correct.
So it's all about the stop.
It's all about the stop. So the state believes that clearly the definition of drive within the Wisconsin statute covers Popke's conduct. So what Popke is really arguing for here is the inclusion of another exception to the rule that drivers must keep to the right. He is saying that driving left of center is not a violation of the statute, so long as the deviation is brief and is quickly corrected. Well, that doesn't make sense from a statutory interpretation perspective, because the law presumes that when a statute lists exceptions, that list is exhaustive. And Wisconsin Statute 346.05 lists certain exceptions to the keep right rule. If, for example, there's an obstacle in the right-hand lane, you are allowed to go to the left-hand lane. But none of those exceptions apply here, and that's undisputed. Secondly, Pocky's argument does not make sense from a policy perspective. The purpose of 346.05, like all other provisions of the Motor Vehicle Code, is to encourage safety on the roadways. And why would the legislature create a law that would allow drivers to swerve to the wrong side of the road for whatever reason they wanted, so long as the swerve is brief? All it takes is a brief swerve to the wrong side of the road to cause a head-on crash. So, point number one, Pocky violated the Motor Vehicle Code. Undisputed that police officers may pull somebody over for violating the Motor Vehicle Code. No challenge to the arrest. All the evidence comes in. Case closed. If this court were to disagree with me on point number one, we would move to the whether or not there's reasonable suspicion of drunk driving. As this court is well aware, reasonable suspicion is a common sense test, which is under all the facts and circumstances present, what would a reasonable police officer reasonably suspect in light of his or her training and experience? So let's look at what Mr. Pocky did. First of all, setting the stage, it's 1:30 in the morning. Secondly, he turned onto a residential street, initially went into the correct lane, then swerved into the wrong lane with three-quarters of his vehicle. So not just a minor, tiny bit of a tire over what the center of the road is. Three-quarters of his vehicle went over. Then he overcorrected. He swerved back to the right, and he almost hit the curb. Then he drifted back to the center, and he almost hit a median. And these three movements occurred over a one-block period. The total distance over which the officer observed Pocky was two blocks. He observed these three lane deviations over a one-block period, flipped on his emergency lights, it took Pocky another block to come to a halt. But those three movements occurred over one block. The state believes that this constitutes certainly reasonable suspicion of drunk driving.
Mr. Neuser, as I understand the decision made by the Court of Appeals here, they looked at our recent decision in Post and used that decision to reverse the decision of the Circuit Court. Do you have any response to how Post applies to this particular situation?
Well, I do. I have two main responses. Number one is I'm slightly troubled by the fact or by the concept that the Court of Appeals may use Post and say that we have to use Post as the example in lane weaving cases. This court has made very clear, and rightly so, that Fourth Amendment jurisprudence is not a place for a cookie-cutter approach. It is dubious to say that an opinion that upholds the constitutionality of a particular stop implicitly holds that any other stop that is not like it is unconstitutional. So the fact that we don't have exactly all of the facts in the Post case is not a dispositive point. Secondly, I think our facts are stronger than in the Post case for two reasons. Number one, we actually have a lane deviation. Post was all intra-lane weaving. And here we have somebody operating left of center, which is unquestionably a more dangerous driving act than simply weaving within one's lane. Secondly, it was later at night than in the Post case. Post occurred at 9:30 at night. This is 1:30 in the morning. I believe this court said that 9:30 at night weighed slightly in favor of a reasonable suspicion finding in Post. It's given later in the evening. 1:30 in the morning is certainly closer to bar time. So in this case, our facts are stronger than in the Post case. So it's the state's position that in this case the court really should not gild the lily. It's very rare in a stop type of case where you have a bright line rule. Here there is a bright line rule, and that is that observed violations of the traffic code justify traffic stops. The officer saw Hopkins' vehicle cross the center of the roadway. That's a fact. It's not clearly erroneous. That's a traffic violation. And an observed left-of-center violation provided a sufficient legal basis for stopping Hopkins. That's the end of the case. That could be a very narrow holding that this court could reach. Alternatively, if we leave the traffic violation aside, Popke swerved into the wrong lane and subsequent overcorrection, which caused him to almost hit the curb, and subsequent drifting, which caused him to almost hit a median at 1:30 a.m. over a short distance, amounted to reasonable suspicion of drunk driving. That's the close of my prepared remarks, and I'd like to use the remainder of this time to address any questions this court may have.
Are there any questions? Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Excuse me. Mr. Carroll, John M. Carroll, Attorney Carroll, counsel for Mr. Popke.
The Court of Appeals made the correct decision in this case. Looking at the narrow issue of Section 346.05, the Court of Appeals found that statute essentially is violated when someone is driving. We are not trying to maintain that Mr. Popke wasn't driving his vehicle. The clear purpose of this statute, ladies and gentlemen, is when someone isn't aware that they're driving in the wrong lane of traffic. If we adopt, the only thing that's novel about this case is the state's interpretation of what this statute is meant to enforce. Under their interpretation, anyone could be pulled over for virtually any reason. The Court of Appeals decision analyzes the left of center violation very carefully. I'd like you to, I provided copies of an exhibit that was introduced to the trial court that shows the viewpoint that the officer had of this intersection. If you look in the record, you can also see an aerial photograph that shows the roadway. So I think the facts are, in this case, are limited to a great extent to the particular location of this stop.
Counsel, though, aren't we really, aside from the photos, limited to the factual findings of the trial court? I mean, if they're not clearly erroneous, how are we to make much out of your...
Well, the Court of Appeals didn't even get to that issue. They actually,
well, I thought you were getting to it. That's right.
No, they didn't even get to the issue because they applied the law to this to this situation correctly, and looked at the record and saw, I think, that the observations and the explanation for the driving was clearly not reasonable suspicion. So there was one circumstance on a road without a center line that basically has no depth perception from that location. And there wasn't more than one circumstance. There was a circumstance.
Mr. Carroll, isn't there an asphalt strip that goes down the middle of the roadway?
Yeah, there is, but the first time he saw it was when I showed him a picture of it. I mean, he couldn't see it from where he was observing this. This is he's sitting there all the time. It's not simply him at the stop sign. That's a location where it's a veritable trap for someone driving through there, and it's a good place for them to sit. The Court of Appeals made the correct decision. I think their interpretation of the statute is appropriate. That's all I had to say today.
So yours is just statutory interpretation. If you swerve over the center line, wherever that may be, it doesn't count unless you stay over there. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the exceptions, first of all, the trial court never made any findings that none of the exceptions didn't apply. But I think sub A might apply in this situation, but that was never mentioned by the trial court. So we feel that he made the correct decision. This, I mean, a decision that the state is recommending would just give them unfettered discretion to pull anyone over if they went over a center line for any moment. And without more, the time of the day, if that's the other fact here, that this did not happen anywhere near any bars. This happened right outside of the outskirts of New London, farm country, near the high school. There were no bars anywhere in that area.
Mr. Carroll, let me interrupt you for a minute, because I want to follow through with what you just said.
Sure.
You said that the judge didn't make any findings in regard to any of the exceptions. And I'm looking at the state's brief at page 7, where they set forth the trial court's ruling. And bear with me, I'm just going to read this. The testimony was that there was nothing in the roadway to interfere with the lane of traffic in the northbound lane. There wasn't any indication there was any construction or animals, persons in the roadway, or any other reason to deviate out of the lane of traffic. The deviation is a violation of the state traffic code and warranted a stop. And don't you think the judge there was addressing the exceptions that are in the...
Yes, he did address, but he didn't find specifically that any of them applied in this situation or that didn't apply. He just mentioned... I suppose I misspoke, but he clearly didn't identify a particular exception that applied or didn't apply.
Well, he didn't go A through F. But he certainly seemed to be making an effort to address those exceptions.
Correct. With regard to the other circumstances that might justify some reasonable suspicion here, this roadway is 11 feet wide. His truck is 6.5 feet wide. It's a residential subdivision, which requires going through several medians. The officer's testimony he described almost striking a median. With those sort of dimensions, that would be not unreasonable.
Counsel, though, I look at Petitioner's Appendix 150, page 38 of the trial court's decision with regard to the 11 feet wide that you're asserting, and he says this: I think it's helpful for the record to reflect that the roadway, which was referred to as 11 feet in width, I believe, by Mr. Carroll, I do not believe is an accurate width of the road. I believe the testimony of Mr. Popke was that the median, the road is 11 feet in width, but that the road was wider over the rest of the road.
Right. Correct. But that's the area where they said he almost hit the median.
So the roadway itself was, 15 or 16 feet?
Yeah, Mr. Popke testified he did the measuring, so I was relying on this, that was in relation to where they said he would have struck or almost struck the median. I think the Court of Appeals even commented on that there was no description of how far from the median or whether he struck the curve when he made the turn or how far he was when he almost struck the curve. And then with regard to the post issue, if I may, I think that case applies in this case only in the sense that after this initial observation was made, there wasn't even any weaving going on. There was perfect driving before the point of the stop. So the post decision, I don't really think applies other than the fact that it was mentioned to the trial court.
What fact found by the trial court is just incredible?
Usually these incidents are videotaped. There wasn't a videotape of this incident, although I think there might have been a video camera in the squad car. And when they turn the blue, my understanding is that when law enforcement turns the lights on, if there's a videotape of the incident, it's depicted for 60 seconds prior to the lights being turned on. So that the idea is so they can't manipulate what's going to be depicted on the video. We didn't have that in this case. So what we did was we took some very detailed pictures of the entire area. And I think that the record is clearly erroneous with regard to the observation of the vehicle going left of center. I don't think that ever occurred. And I think the court made a finding that the vehicle was 3/4 left of center, but we disagreed with that. And the Court of Appeals didn't even get to that point. At this point, in terms of the standard of review,
did the circuit court have all of these photographs?
They had the entire record, yes.
Okay. And the circuit court, this is Judge Huber?
Judge Huber, Raymond Huber.
He's been around Waupaca County a long time. He's got your photographs. He hears your arguments. He hears the testimony of the officer. Aren't you asking us really to disregard his findings of fact?
I wasn't the one who appealed this case. The state was. What I'm asking you to do is uphold the Court of Appeals' interpretation of the statute as being the correct one. From the police officers that I've talked to, they want some parameters put on the observation. This took seconds, and he decides that he can pull him over immediately on this brief observation. He jumped the gun. He could have at least followed him a little bit further and observed some more violations. Nobody was present by his own testimony. There's no unsafe lane deviation requires another vehicle. Something about the situation makes it unsafe. So the state, that isn't occurring in this case at all. It's simply the issue of whether the sole observation of a vehicle going left of center momentarily is sufficient to pull the home over without any of the exceptions.
So what parameters would you suggest for the officers who seek parameters?
Well, I think the officers just want to know how to deal with this in this situation. You know, the suggestion that I would make is that it's clear that the driver is not aware that he's in the wrong lane of traffic. The driving is occurring in the wrong lane when it shouldn't be. If the officer knows that there's a reason why this 90-degree angle might cause a slight deviation, and the roadway right after this turn, he has to make another right turn, so he would have to correct into the left lane a little bit to make that turn safely. And the officer knows this. He admitted that. He admitted that this is a difficult turn to make in his testimony. So I guess I think it requires a little bit more is what I'm looking for. What I'm asking the court to suggest here. And with regard to, I don't think it's, the state knows better. It's not relevant what his priors are or what the BAC level is. And that's not an issue here. And that's inserted throughout their brief. I would ask you to uphold the Court of Appeals in this case.
Thank you, counsel. Noiser?
Sorry, can I move your seat?
I'm sorry. The defense have anything else they wanted to say? Mr. Carroll? Well, this is the only time you're going to get. Okay, thank you. Mr. Noiser?
A few things. As to the comment that it's not relevant what his priors are, he was convicted of third offense out of UI. He's challenging to the judgment of conviction, so certainly the prior offenses are relevant. Second of all, as to Justice Gableman's inquiry as to what are the parameters that police officers should apply, I was slightly troubled by opposing counsel's comment that we should simply allow drunk drivers more leash. If you see a vehicle swerving three times in a one-block period, you should just follow them a little bit more and see what happens. that's not upholding the public safety that police officers have to do. I think it was wise for the police officer to pull this guy over when he did. As it turns out, he was correct. He was three times over the legal limit. In terms of the photograph that opposing counsel submitted of this intersection, slightly misleading to suggest that that vantage point was where the officer observed the lane deviation. The officer's testimony is clear. He was following right behind Popke at the time Popke swerved left of center. The transcript, page 14, the officer testified that as soon as Popke turned onto Cedarhurst Drive, he began to, quote, follow right behind, end quote, Popke's vehicle. Transcript, page 20, Popke's vehicle then, quote, went over the center line right in front of me, and then swerved back to the right into its proper lane of traffic again. So to suggest that this photograph represents entirely where the police officer saw the left-of-center deviation is simply false. The state has nothing to say.
Thank you, Mr. Noiser. I want to thank Attorneys Noiser and Carroll for their arguments today on an issue we frequently get here, namely, what is the basis for a stop and seizure. And that concludes our hearing in 08 AP 446 CR State versus Popke. The court is in recess until 1:30, and the students may remain here, and Justice Gableman will be out to speak with you. Court's in recess.